Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. I think I was like a lot of folks today. Came home from church after a really cool sermon and good time of fellowship, having lunch with a good friend of the family. And got home and noticed that the piece of flashing had blown off the house in the winds that we've had here over the past few days here at the McBurney compound. So I and the bird whisperer repaired the flashing that had blown off the house. And it was just a good Sunday. The winds had died down. It was temperate. Everybody was full and comfortable and we're doing just fine. And I went to check the news in order to get prepared for the show today. And of course, I read the story about the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, where as we go to air, 26 were massacred, another 20 or more wounded. Just horrifying. 10:30 this morning at a Baptist church in rural Texas, another maniac goes on a killing spree. A massacre. And as we go to air, we don't know much other than apparently it was a young white male dressed in all black. Possibly shot or at least stopped by a local, an armed citizen. The suspect's dead. Suspect. I don't know that he could be called a suspect at this point. I was going to open the show with a story about Muslims and terrorism and all that, but it's as if the children of Columbine are in a contest with the children of Mohammed to see who can bring the most terror and death and bloodshed and horror on the scene in American life. And it's just depressing, frankly. Just depressing. So, but I guess the show goes on. Isn't that strange that any of us can go about our daily affairs having to act as if nothing happened or having to at least behave as if nothing's so shocking that we don't just want to drop everything and cry and freak out about what's going on. But I guess that's what we have to do. I guess we have to continue to march, as we used to say. And it reminds me, I had a brief conversation on Facebook, which I'm not apt to do very often. But someone had posted a story about how some Christians had gone down to the Pulse nightclub, a gay bar in Orlando that was shot up by a Muslim, 50 people killed, I think. Anyway, it was a story about how Christians had gone to the scene after the massacre to witness to all the perverts in the wake of the mass shooting in Orlando. And one of my Facebook friends posted a video, a 45-minute video, that claimed that the Pulse nightclub attack was all actors. And it wasn't real, it was a false flag. And so I just commented that the guy was a whack job. Well, he got upset. He's a pro-life, he's not a friend of mine, but he's a Facebook friend. And he wanted people to watch his 45-minute video. I watched a little bit of it, And it's just it's another one of these videos where a chaotic scene and conflicting accounts of what had occurred, claims about injuries that didn't appear to be actual injuries, and so naturally it's the CIA who did it all. And that never happened. You've got these crackpots. I called him a no, I didn't call him a crackpot. I called him a whack job, and he thought that was immature. And I told him, I said, I'm not calling you a whack job as just an ad hominem attack. I'm genuinely concerned for your mental health that you entertain foolishness to the point of absurdity to want other people to watch a deranged 45-minute video that claims that the Pulse nightclub massacre was all a false flag. And, well, I pointed out to the young man that, you know, just because you're against murdering babies doesn't mean that you're really qualified to analyze anything, or that anyone should really even need to listen to you. Because being against murdering children just barely qualifies you as a decent human being. You meet the minimum requirements to participate in society. But I don't necessarily need to entertain your foolishness. Anyway, I'm sure he's upset with me. But that's all right. I asked him if he thought that this shooting at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, had actually occurred. And I do think that they all occurred. I think Sandy Hook really occurred. I think the Las Vegas shooting, that massacre, that actually happened. Anyway, I guess should I go to the news? It's kind of tough. Well, let's start with the Muslims because I think this is appropriate, or at least it's relevant. The New York Post reported this past week that the Islamic State has posted threats against 4-year-old Prince George online. Have you seen pictures of Prince George online? He's a cute kid. And the Islamic State, well, they posted images showing the young Prince George standing in front of his London school. And the images bore the message, "School starts early." And it was a threat against Prince George by the jihadis. They go on to talk about how the bullets and blood and unbelievers and retaliation, all the typical jihadi stuff. And this was before I knew anything about what had occurred or what was going to occur in Texas. But I made a note on the story, who is more likely to harm Prince George? ISIS? Or Prince George's father and grandfather and British civilization in general. Who's more likely to harm Prince George? And I don't think ISIS will ever lay a glove on Prince George. But his father and his grandfather, on the other hand, will have quite an impact on how the young man's worldview evolves. And I've got a quote here from Prince William, who is the father of young Prince George. This is from the Telegraph in London. Prince William says that rapidly growing human population risks having a terrible impact on the world. There's too many people in the world. He went on to say that wildlife is being put under enormous pressure by too many people. And his grandfather, the Duke of Edinburgh, in 2011 advocated voluntary family limitation as a means of solving the terrifying prospect of overpopulation. So who's more likely to bring harm to Prince George? His family or ISIS? His deranged, inbred, whack job family, who've been bamboozled by the overpopulation myth, or ISIS. I think the answer is obvious.
kids, right? Two or three.
Does he have three kids? I think they only have two. I think they're voluntarily limiting themselves. Do they have three? It's possible. I don't keep up with the royal family like I used to.
You used to?
Well, actually, I never did. Meanwhile, if we go back to the terrorist attack from last week or the week before last, which was a Muslim, what was the most recent one? I'm having a hard time recalling exactly what the most recent terrorist attack was. It was the Muslim with the Ryder truck. No, not the Ryder truck.
Manhattan thing?
Yes, Manhattan, the Home Depot truck, right? That's it. It was the Home Depot truck, the rampage, the Muslim slaughtering all those innocent people in the streets of New York, screaming Allahu Akbar as he jumped out of the car. Well, that was going to be the lead top story terrorist attack on the Weekly Worldview this week, but that's before one of the children of Columbine detonated in Summerfield Springs, Texas. And but before all that, Sutherland Springs, Texas. Yeah. Young white male dressed in all black, from what we understand. But before that, we were concerned about the Islamic fanatic terrorists. After the New York City attack, local news station here in Denver, KUSA 9 News, interviewed a Muslim who the author of the article says, Muslims once again find themselves defending their faith, particularly one phrase, Allahu Akbar. Yeah, they interviewed Imam Jodeh with the Colorado Muslim Society, who said, quote, Allahu Akbar is something that was so beautiful and innocent throughout the 1400 years of Islam and now is related to terror. It's something that we say all the time, all day long, she said. Oh. She said, a female imam over at the Denver, Colorado Muslim Society. I didn't know they had those. They have female imams anyway. She says, it's something that we say all the time, all day long. We say it 5 times a day in our prayers, and we say it in between prayers as well. It's nothing that should be linked to any terror attacks or violence at all. And she urges people, Americans in particular, not to make the connection between Allahu Akbar and terrorism. First of all, there was nothing beautiful and innocent throughout the 1400 years of Islam. And I might want to remind you folks in the audience that for 1400 years prior to about 2001, in fact, I can peg the date right around September 15th, 2001, when Islam began being called the religion of peace. But for the 1400 years prior, everyone from George Washington to Ronald Reagan knew that Islam was a fanatic, pagan, evil death cult. I mean, the American military was basically founded in order to destroy Muslim terrorists in North Africa. That's why that was the Marine Corps and the Navy. One of their very first operations was against the Mohammedans in the late 1700s. All right. But Imam Jodeh says that it was beautiful and peaceful. Although nothing was beautiful and peaceful. Allahu Akbar, 9 News points out, simply means God is great. It's the phrase, unfortunately, that Saifullo Saipov allegedly yelled when he jumped out of the truck that he had just used to murder more than a dozen people in New York. And now it's Imam Moda who wants to clear up the real meaning behind the phrase, and she's free to do so. I would just ask her to keep both hands visible as she's clearing that up for us. Ms. Joda. All right. Speaking of the Muslims, I was also going to address the events in Saudi Arabia over this past just this weekend. What's going on there? They had a Yemeni missile that was fired at the airport that the Saudi Arabians interrupted and intercepted, and then there was this massive government purge by the king and one of the princes against, well, just about every other prince was arrested or detained. And then there's a helicopter crash where half a dozen high-ranking government officials were killed there in Saudi Arabia. I have no idea what's going on there, but I have a feeling that something significant is occurring behind the scenes. And it has a lot to do with the civil war in Yemen and the corruption in Saudi Arabia and the price of oil and the pressure on the royal family and perhaps the desire of some within the royal family there to extricate themselves from the Salafist terrorism that Saudi Arabia has funded and sponsored around the world for the better part of 100 years. I have a feeling it has something to do with all of that. Although I'm not an expert in the area, but I think we should definitely keep our eyes on Saudi Arabia. We should always keep Islamic terrorism in mind and be vigilant. But I'm more terrified by the descendants of Columbine than I am by the descendants of Mohammed. Come back, and the show must go on, and we must continue to march. I don't know. I feel like the whole nation should be in sackcloth and ashes and mourning. That's what I feel like. But I also realize that we have all become inured to the shock and horror of mass murder. And so life goes on, and we continue with the Weekly Worldview, even though we have no real right to do so. I mean, everything should stop. Everyone should stop and take stock of what is happening, which I had the opportunity to do before the broadcast. As I prayed for the families of the victims, and I prayed at the time, I didn't know who the killer was or if he was alive or dead, and I prayed that the police would get him and kill him. And, the suspect is dead. And more will come out on that. In the meantime, we will go to the justice file, where St. Louis Today reports that a St. Louis man, paroled from prison after murdering three people in the 70s, is headed back to prison after murdering yet another innocent person at his St. Louis apartment complex. Torrance Epps, 79 years old, pled guilty this past Monday to a reduced charge of second-degree murder in St. Louis. And he was sentenced to 18 years in prison. The judge asked Epps to explain why on January 19th this year he rolled his wheelchair through the senior housing complex where he lived, shooting at people and killing Teandra Johnson, 32 years old, in the complex office. He told the judge he suspected she had stolen from his apartment and said, "I'm awfully sorry, but I was awfully upset," he said. And then the judge sentenced him to 18 years in prison. Epps had served 14 years when he was first paroled in September of 1988. He had murdered three people. He had murdered three people. Family members, by the way. He murdered his wife's mother, Pauline Clark, 44, and his wife's grandparents, Matthew and Pauline Sherman, both 72 years old. He shot them to death. And for whatever reason, he got paroled, because the whole nation has been insane for my entire lifetime. I can't even comprehend how this man ever was released from prison. Anyway, he had served 14 years. In September 88, he's inexplicably sent to a halfway house where he escaped. He was a fugitive then for 8 years before he was caught in a food stamp fraud crackdown by federal agents, and he was returned to prison, where he was then inexplicably paroled in 2003. And now he has murdered another person. You know, I heard a very well-known talk show host this week ask, why is it that the judges who let these murderers go, how come there's no consequences for them? And I started banging on my dashboard, saying that we have been calling for consequences for judges who release murderers, since we burned all of O.J. Simpson's stuff on the steps of the L.A. County Courthouse in 1999, myself and Pastor Bob Enyard and other members of American Right to Life, we all said these judges need to be held responsible. But, of course, it fell on deaf ears. Why? Well, because the nation, the legal system has lost its mind, at least since the 1970s, as we see evidenced here. But it was good to hear someone outside of my little circle wonder aloud why it is judges are allowed to act with impunity, releasing people who subsequently hurt and kill other people, and nothing happens to the judge. The judge who paroled this man should be arrested and put on trial for his life. The parole board who allowed this guy out, they should all be rounded up and arrested. The judge who didn't put this guy to death, well, just not qualified to be a judge. He's probably passed away, but he should have been arrested. Because in a civilized society, we should not be expected to tolerate violence and murder as a means to solve problems, which is what the release of people like Mr. Torrance Epps, the release of people like this sends the message to society that while we frown upon murder, we certainly don't take it seriously enough to put an end to the murderous behavior of at least the person that we convict. Couldn't we at least put an end to that person's murderous career as a murderer? Not even that, no. And so as murder becomes rampant, it's epidemic. Murder and suicide, by the way. Suicide should be criminal. There should be a social stigma against suicide. But now everybody just weeps and cries for people who kill themselves when we should be angry at them. Case in point from NBC Washington, from the domestic tranquility file. A 12-year-old boy plunged from an overpass in Virginia in a suicide attempt and killed a woman who was driving her SUV on the interstate below. And the 12-year-old survived while Marissa Harris, 22 years old, a resident of Maryland, was killed in his suicide attempt. That last report, the 12-year-old was in the hospital with life-threatening injuries. Just a horrifying, can you imagine this? You're driving down the freeway. The boy jumped from the overpass and landed on her SUV at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Her boyfriend happened to be sitting in the passenger seat. He was able to grab the wheel, steer the vehicle off the road. But poor Marissa Harris was killed by the impact and pronounced dead at the scene. The 12-year-old boy attended Fairfax County Public Schools, who sent parents an email on Monday advising them to be aware of signs of mental illness in their children. And I looked for updates on the story to find out if we had any information as to why the 12-year-old was suicidal. I couldn't find any updates. I tried to find updates on if the 12-year-old had died or just any further information. But there is none. Because the bloodshed and misery and horror in the news every day is such an avalanche that no one has time to follow up on stories like this. The next big murder is already consuming the newsprint and the time slots on the news. There's no time to find out why would this 12-year-old do this? Well, it's now we may not know until Judgment Day, but we will know at some point. So we'll move from that to a story that's, well, just reason number 1,106 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. It comes to us from Kentucky.com. A grandmother, I said, Frances Joyce Bailey, 60 years old, is accused of unlawfully entering Pleasure Ridge High School and throwing nude photos of a woman on the floor of the girls' restroom and on the grass next to a parking lot. Grandma Bailey was identified from surveillance video and was charged with distribution of obscene matter. This is what she was charged with there on the grounds of the school. The woman in the photos had dated Grandma Bailey's son and has a child who attends the high school. Grandma Bailey's granddaughter also attends the high school. The photos were found by underage female students who weren't related to whatever's going on between these two freaks. It was reason number 1,106. Your kids could come into contact with Grandma Bailey. And that hurts me to say. I actually had a Grandma Bailey. My grandmother, my paternal grandmother, was named Bailey. And no matter what kind of toxic situation she may have gotten into with neighbors, friends, relatives, fornicators, adulterers, whatever happened, my grandma Bailey would have never done anything like that. But this ain't your grandma's grandma, I guess. This is. Let's move on. Let's move on to reason number 1,107 to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. Teachers and staff in Salem, Oregon, the public school district there, were recently told that if they learn or suspect that a student is sexually active, they are required to report it to law enforcement or other state officials. Yeah, yes, shocking, right? That's the instruction that the teachers received. Well, believe it or not, according to Oregon law, anyone who's under 18 years old cannot legally give consent, meaning all sexual activity between minors is considered sexual abuse. This policy, district officials say, stems from Oregon's mandatory reporting and child abuse laws. But the authors at the Washington Post say, well, that seems to be a singular interpretation of the law. The newspaper reached out to the school districts around the state and found that not one of them had instituted such a mandate, and I'm sure that all the teachers and administrators in the public school systems all around the state of Oregon were shocked and surprised to find that fornication amongst teenagers is illegal. They had no clue. And the district who issued the policy guidance saying that teachers should report suspected activity, fornication amongst the teenagers, they were shocked that they were, well, now they're embarrassed that they even said it. Now they say that it's, the district claimed that the policy is for the teenager's safety. But many disagree. They even started an online petition calling for an end to the mandate that teachers should report fornication among their teenage students. Some pointed out that this leaves high school students without anyone to speak with about sex. Well, what about their parents? In fact, I think it should only be the purview of the parents to speak with teenage kids about sex. See, I wanted her real bad, and I was about to give in. And that's when she started talking about true love.
Your hands to yourself.
All right, welcome back, folks. It's the Weekly Worldview coming to you from the boiler room here at the McBurney compound. And so the idea that fornication is anything other than just a common practice among high school students, that idea is ridiculed. And that's where we are. I guess call me a prude. Call me a prude, yes. Do I want to go to the... Yes, let's go to the GOP. The Republicans are working feverishly on their vaunted tax reform. Because despite the fact that Donald Trump and the so-called conservatives, I should just say the Republicans there in Washington, have failed to deliver one jot or tittle to stem the decline and fall of Western culture. Despite the fact that they have not lifted one finger to do anything about the cultural rot that is infecting and destroying the nation, they're going to give you your money. We're gonna lower your taxes. That's it, because we're conservatives. Anyway, the new tax plan was unveiled last week, and townhall.com reports that the new tax bill, the proposed legislation, allows parents to contribute to their unborn baby's 529 college savings account. Yes. Here is the text from the proposed legislation. Quote, nothing shall prevent an unborn child from being treated as a designated beneficiary. Nothing. Well, except if you abort it, which we're going to kill. You can murder the child. That would prevent the child from being treated as a designated beneficiary. By the way, murdering the child is legal. We're not going to do anything about that. But if you don't murder the child, you can name the unborn child as a designated beneficiary. The town hall says that the legislation defines an unborn child as a child in utero. Furthermore, a member of the species Homo sapien at any stage of development who is carried in the womb. Just to put a fine point on it there, so that all the pro-life organizations, the pro-life industry over there at Susan B. Anthony List and National Right to Life Committee and Life News and all the other pro-life industry hacks can send out their fundraising letters this week going out to say how much we're winning. We're winning. The Republicans that we elected have acknowledged the personhood of the unborn child. And so I was reading the article, trying to find a reason to give the Republicans some credit for doing something right, and I can find none. I'm sorry. This is a very frail bone thrown to social conservatives to ameliorate the fact that the Republicans have done nothing but lie to us and continue the steep decline into moral and spiritual chaos that's consuming the country and consuming a million or so innocent lives every year legally under the administration of the Republican Party and the Democrats. But that goes without saying, right? We know where the Democrats stand. The Republicans, on the other hand, they're going to keep the murder of the innocent child legal, but they are going to acknowledge that those are people, which is probably worse than a brainwashed, maniacal Democrat drug addict who just is a pro-abort. It's probably worse. NARAL came along with the obligatory condemnation.
Inserting personhood language into their tax bill is just the latest example of how they're trying to turn the clock back on this country.
That was NARAL's Kaylee Hansen Long.
She says the GOP has a relentless obsession with its anti-choice ideology that knows no boundaries, no common sense.
Well, there is a boundary, Kaylee. The Republicans are keeping the murder of the child legal. So there is a boundary to the GOP's obsession with anti-choice ideology. There is a boundary there. Those of us who are actually abolitionists and pro-life, we recognize the boundary that the leftists and the murderers have effectively put up against phony baloney Republicans. Let's see. We have another quote from the Vice President of Public Policy and Government Affairs with the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. That's Dana Singer, whatever.
She says, denying women access to safe legal abortion is wildly out of touch with the majority of Americans.
To which just any thinking person who's paying attention would say, Dana, where did the Republicans deny women abortions? When have the Republicans stopped one single abortion in the last 40 years? If you could point out one instance, please, can anyone point out one instance in which one Republican politician has stopped the murder of one innocent child in my lifetime? Has there been one? If there was, I missed it. And if I hear about it, I'll be happy to report it on the air because I would be proud of whoever that Republican was. Meanwhile, the pro-life industry chimed in. The March for Life president, Gene Mancini, says, listen to this. The proposed tax plan is a huge leap forward for an antiquated tax code. And we hope this is the first step in expanding the child tax credit to include unborn children as well. She doesn't say we should stop murdering the unborn children. No. There's a boundary, you understand. The pro-life industry operates within the boundary of keeping the murder of innocent children alive, but fundraising and building a career on claiming you're pro-life and bamboozling gullible Christians. And March for Life President Gene Mancini operates within that well-established boundary, calling for a tax credit. The child tax credit should include unborn children, the ones who are not murdered legally, which we're not going to do anything to seriously challenge that. Please don't worry about that. We're operating within the boundaries. After all, we don't have an obsession with stopping the murder of innocent children. That would be wildly out of touch with the pro-life industry, as a matter of fact. But there you have that. So no credit to the GOP for putting that in the tax bill. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. It's phony baloney. It's fake. It doesn't do anything to stop the actual killing, and so I give you zero credit. And how much do you want to bet that that will be removed so that freak lesbian Republican chick from Maine, whose name I can't remember, so that they can get her vote? And then she won't vote for it anyway because she's a socialist on top of being a pro-abort. Susan Collins, I think, is her name. Now, I don't know if she's a lesbian. I'm just assuming. That's just my opinion, yes. Let's go from that right on over to the science, really, file, where Stephen Hawking checks in, as usual. Stephen Hawking now says that robots will eventually replace humanity completely. Yes. He believes artificial intelligence will eventually reach a level where it will essentially be what he calls a new form of life that will outperform humans. This is according to the Cambridge News over in the United Kingdom, and as reported by the Mirror, tabloid over there. He was the 75-year-old nut job, who's, I'm sure he's good at math, don't get me wrong. I'm sure he's good at math, but he's obviously a nut. He's a whack job. And that's not ad hominem. I don't mean that just as a derogatory throwaway term. He's genuinely mentally ill. He's a whack job. He was interviewed with Wired Magazine. He does say that a new space program should be launched so that we can colonize suitable planets for human habitation. He says, I believe we have reached the point of no return. Obviously projecting his own deranged state of mind onto the rest of us. Steve, you've reached the point of no return. Some of us out here are doing fine. So he wants to cut. Now, I do agree with Stephen Hawking that there should be an active and robust space exploration program. I am all for that. But the whole colonizing of planets and, Steve, you lose me on that. Steve says, quote, the Earth is becoming too small for us. Population is increasing at an alarming rate. And we are in danger of self-destructing. Again, projecting his suicidal mental derangement upon the rest of us. Steve, you are in danger of self-destruction. I, on the other hand, I'm all right. Don't spend your time worrying about me, Steve. You might want to focus on your own mental health. Yeah. Stop projecting your irrational fear onto young, impressionable kids. By the way, Steve, I can handle it when you say that we're going to kill ourselves and the Earth is going to die and we're going to all be eaten by artificially intelligent robots. I can deal with that because I know you're a whack job. But it's the young, impressionable kids who are taught to practically worship you alongside the false god of science. You're the high priest of the false god of evolutionary Big Bang science. It's the young, impressionable kids that whose mental health you are threatening. You teach them, you brainwash a whole generation of young kids that they're basically consigned to destroying the planet. They evolve from nothing, that there is no God, that everything happened by accident, and they're bad, and they're destroying the planet, and they're headed toward inevitable suffering and death and pain and nothingness. That's what you advocate, Mr. Hawking. And it's those young kids, their psyche may not be able to handle the fact that you are a maniacal whack job.
Every moment as it breaks, coming now, yeah.
the Weekly Worldview. And there's a perfect example right there. Chris Cornell, one of the most talented musicians of his generation, grew up worshiping the false god of science and atheism, believed he was destroying the planet and headed toward inevitable suffering and death and pain, ending in nothingness or oblivion. And so he hangs himself. He becomes suicidal. For no good reason that I could see.
He knows now it's not real.
Yeah, and now Chris knows that that was all a lie. Yeah. It's quite the wake-up call. Anyway, I'll be interested to find out the cultural and social upbringing of the latest mass murderer down in Sutherland Spring, Texas. Was he a homeschool kid raised in the fear and admonition of the Lord who believed in Genesis and that God created us and that we're all responsible to God and one another? Or was he a product of the atheistic Antichrist government schools from a broken family and just your typical? Was he a worshiper of the false god of science, atheism, and the Big Bang? We may not have time to find out because the next mass shooting may consume all the newsprint and all the blocks of time in the media. There may not be time to catch up with this one. But Mr. Stephen Hawking, I hold you personally responsible for the mental illness of a million kids. You piece of garbage. You liar. All right. Now, let's step away from that file into the bad religion file, where Christ Church in Alexandria, Virginia, announced a couple of weeks ago, I didn't get to this last week, I wanted to, they announced that they were taking down a memorial that honored George Washington and Robert E. Lee. Now, why did this church have a memorial to George Washington and Robert E. Lee? Because they actually attended this church. In fact, George Washington was one of the founding members of this church. Well, the church's leadership said that the twin memorials are relics of another era and have no business in a church that proclaims as its motto, "All are welcome, no exceptions." Well, except George Washington and Robert E. Lee, that's a well-known heterosexual Christian men. Anyway, I did a little bit of research, and the pastorette at the Christ Church in Alexandria would make George Washington vomit. He would have her arrested as she hands out her blessings to homosexual couples and organized events in support of homosexual marriage. The pastorette there, the new pastorette at Antichrist Church in Alexandria, Virginia, as we've now dubbed it here on the Weekly Worldview. I posted on their website. You are allowed to comment. Anyway, they deleted my comments because I said George Washington and Robert E. Lee would vomit at the sight of the pile of homos who've taken over their church. And that stayed up for about 5 seconds. As an original benefactor, Washington Times reports that George Washington bought pew number 5 when the church opened in 1773. He was a vestryman and contributed to the church throughout his life. His family considered the church important enough to him that it donated one of his Bibles to the church after his death. Meanwhile, Robert E. Lee attended Christ Church beginning at age 3 when he moved from Stratford to Alexandria. The church was so integral to his family that Mary Custis Lee, his daughter, left the church $10,000 in her will upon her death in 1918. And that money was used to begin the church's endowment, which continues to this day and is now marrying off piles of fags. Church leaders did not say whether they will attempt to return the $10,000 gift corrupted by the hand of the daughter of Robert E. Lee. Obviously, she was the product of a heterosexual relationship that is... It's a relic of another era and has no business in a church whose motto is, "All are welcome, no exceptions." Unbelievable. I am certain that Robert E. Lee, George Washington, and their slaves would all be repulsed by the open preaching of faggotry from the pulpit at Antichrist Church in Alexandria, Virginia. So there you have it. That's the bad religion file, ladies and gentlemen, and that goes. Now, do we want to talk about Kevin Spacey? Kevin Spacey turns out to be a homosexual child molester, and the homos are all upset. Not that Kevin Spacey attempted to molest, I don't know, a dozen or more underage boys. They're more upset that after he got caught and outed as a child molester, he came out as a homosexual. That's what they're mad about. Spacey had just finished filming a Netflix production about the life of Gore Vidal. How appropriate is that? That guy always gave me the creeps. I thought that him and everyone involved in that movie, American Beauty, they all should have been arrested. That movie was about, if I'm not mistaken, I never saw it, but I heard that that movie was about an older man molesting a teenage girl. That was as far as Spacey was willing to push it, you know. He kept it, but actually what was going on with Spacey, well, we all know what was going on. And everybody apparently knew. I got an email from my other brother, Daryl, with two references to Kevin Spacey by, who was the guy? I don't recognize the guy's name. So Seth MacFarlane, who apparently makes a show called The Family Guy that I've seen it, but never for more than 3 seconds because it's disgusting and vulgar, and I don't go in for that kind of stuff. But apparently that show made a reference to a child who had escaped from Kevin Spacey's basement. And then this Seth MacFarlane made a joke about it at an awards show about a woman or several women who, now that you're nominees, you no longer have to pretend you're attracted to Harvey Weinstein. So this guy Seth MacFarlane, he should be interrogated to find out what all he knew. Well, everybody knew, and now the homos are upset because Kevin Spacey has associated male homosexuality with child molestation. He says, "I choose now to live as a gay man." I have an article from CNN. It's an opinion piece, where the author says, Kevin Spacey's statement that "I choose now to live as a gay man" pushes 2,000 years of homophobic stereotypes. Is Spacey shamelessly trying to shift the focus of being a child molester to coming out as a gay man? Or is this even worse, an attempt to suggest that Spacey's attraction to underage men is intrinsic to his homosexuality? Please, Kevin Spacey doesn't have to imply that. We've got 5,000 years of recorded human history that imply that, for crying out loud. Have you ever sat down with a homosexual who's in a crisis and asked him when it was he became a homosexual? Because most of them will tell you about the older man who molested them. It's common knowledge. We didn't need Kevin Spacey to point this out. Anyway, I would ask the author, how old were you when you were molested, if the author's a homosexual? But it turns out the author is a woman. Allegedly. I don't know. Maybe it's a trans. Who knows anymore? But please. The idea that we need Kevin Spacey to associate faggots with molesting boys, I mean, anyone who's been paying attention. All right, let's move on. A judge has blocked President Trump's ban against trannies in the military. Judge Colleen Collar Cottley said that the plaintiffs, apparently a bunch of pile or two or three piles of homos, have filed a... And by the way, trannies, they're just homos. They're just a little more mentally disturbed than your average homo. That's all. Well, a bunch of them, mentally deranged trannies, had filed a lawsuit, and the judge says that the plaintiffs have established that they will be injured by these directives due to the inequality that the ban imposes. The judge was also upset that Trump announced it on Twitter. The judge said that the announcement came without any of the formality or deliberative processes that generally accompany the development and announcement of major policy changes. Hey, Judge Colleen, we're talking about trannies in the military. We don't need a whole lot of deliberative process to understand that that needs to be banned, and that the previous president, Barry Ho, was a mentally deranged homosexualist hell-bent on destroying the military. We need to think about it for about 3 seconds before we ban trannies from the military, and it should be done on Twitter in less than 160 characters. That's all the debate we need. But the judge, now how is it that this judge can do this and there's no recourse from anyone else in the government? How is it that the president or the Congress can't impeach this judge or have her arrested? How is that? We have no recourse against these judges? Is that what you're telling me? Oh, I forgot that we've already endowed the judiciary with the sacred right to murder innocent people. Oh, that's right. Once you give them that, it's kind of hard to question their authority on anything, ever. Which is further evidence that the very first step to saving America has to be stopping the murder of innocent people in our midst. That has to be the very first thing. And I don't mean writing them into the tax code as if you're going to treat them as people. And I don't mean making the child credit extend to the unborn. I'm talking about stopping killing innocent people by the millions. You bastards. And meanwhile, we had a report this week. It was everywhere about Soviet communism. You all saw this this article this week. I'm sure you saw it on every single website as I did. It was called Communism's Bloody Century. Listen to this. Since 1917, I'll put a link so you can read the whole article, but I just want to point out this fact. Since 1917, the Soviet Union, China, Mongolia, Eastern Europe, Indochina, Africa, Afghanistan, and parts of Latin America, communism has claimed at least 65 million lives, which is absolutely true. And communism is absolutely evil, deplorable, and should be condemned and fought against by force of arms at all times. Ladies and gentlemen, since communism's rise in the early 20th century, the Western socialist democracies, amongst whom are Britain and France and the United States and Germany, Canada and Australia, and Japan, the Western socialist democracies in that same time period have murdered over 100 million innocent children. And the socialist democracies of the West are not waning in their influence, their corrupt and evil influence, but they're waxing in their political entrenchment and their influence in society. So that it's the pot calling the kettle black for the Western socialist democracies to condemn the communists for their 65 million when there's over 100 million that we have allowed to be murdered. We have administered the murder of innocent children. I know. Russia has aborted 100 million. I know that. But I'm making a point about those of us who hold communism in contempt. Only those of us who hold child killing in contempt that have the moral authority to condemn communism. All right, let's go here to the personhood file. Do I want to do this? Oh, let's go to Florida. Yeah, let's do this. We'll probably end on this. Tampa, Florida from... from clickorlando.com. Hampton Station Pizzeria is a popular pizza joint in Tampa. They recently announced their no children policy on effective October 24th. How did they announce it? Well, they put a sign on the front door that reads, quote, "No children," unquote. Why? Well, people are freaking out and they're upset and they're mad. And so they interviewed the owner, Troy. He's the owner of the Hampton Station Pizzeria. He says he made the decision because parents were unable to keep their kids under control. And he feared that he'd be held liable should some sort of accident occur when the undisciplined little punks run around his restaurant. So he just said, look, I'm not willing to do it. No kids. Ironically, the restaurant uses action figures to hold order markers. So it's harkening back to a time. That's right. They have little action figures, right, on the tables to hold the order markers. Harkening back to a time, right? Weren't we harkening back earlier in the show? Well, this harkens back to a time when even the most hapless of parents shared enough of a common heritage and belief system to train up their children to at least the minimum acceptable level. The kids knew you had to behave in public. Don't embarrass mom and dad. Behave. Right? You didn't have to be an icon of moral turpitude to have your kids in the restaurant and not act like complete maniacs. But now, no more. Not even amongst those of us who are enlightened are there many parents left anymore who can even bring their kids up to the minimal acceptable standard of behavior in public or private. Frankly, and it's just sad and disturbing. And I'm with Troy, the poor guy. He doesn't want to get sued when your kid stabs another kid in the eye with a fork. All right. Let's end in Hungary. I was going to end with Planned Parenthood, but they can go straight to hell. How about that? Put them on the bottom of the stack. In Hungary, speaking at a celebratory event marking the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, their Prime Minister Orbán said that it was the duty of his government to protect, quote, the ways of life that have their roots in Christianity. Yeah. Yes, yes. Breitbart reports that after decades of communist rule, the Hungarians' emergence from the collapsed Soviet Empire led them to look to their Christian heritage to frame their constitution, which begins, quote, God bless the Hungarians. Yeah. All right. Well, if the president will stand up and acknowledge God, God might just bless the Hungarians. Last month, Poland celebrated the anniversary of the Battle of Lepanto. You remember that one? That's where the Christian fleet overcame the Muslim armada, saving Europe from the Islamists. The anniversary was marked by the Rosary on the Borders campaign and saw over 1 million Poles pray along the country's border for the salvation of their country. And the event was openly supported by Poland's prime minister. How about that? We need some of that here in America. We need our leaders to acknowledge the prayers and the need for the blessing of God. That's the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Weekly Worldview. I can't remember how to end the show. Oh, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, American Life, RightToLife.com, and of course my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.